Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio in real time via ZipWhip landline texting at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Our special guest this morning, Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park historian Frank O'Reilly is here. We are at the point in history in this time of year where a number of battles were taking place, and we're going to cover them all this morning. Frank, great to have you back. Good morning.
Good morning, Ted. It's great to be here.
This is a for the Park Service, and in past years when we've had anniversaries, the 4 or 5 years ago, this was really a big time.
You're right. It's hard to believe, but the 150th anniversary of the American Civil War was just 5 years ago. So for us, it's just 5 years, but the other way to look at it is it's been almost half a decade.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't seem that long. Those were the 2 years where you really had a lot of events to cover. The weather was this time of year, you never know, and it was really good for all of it. And boy, those were really good days.
Oh, they were good days, and it was great to have you out there in the field with us. The 150th anniversary was a time for us to really reflect and commemorate and just pull out the stops and define our past and what it means to us now and for the future. So we were really excited to do everything and anything we could.
We were really lucky around here when you think about it. Now, I look upon it as lucky. Those of you who were putting programs together for really over a 3-year period that you did. But this area, as far as a lot of areas had a skirmish or a battle or two. We had some pretty significant things here.
It sure did. That's what sets our community apart from everywhere else in this entire country. There are other places that did host a Civil War. You're right. There's the Gettysburgs and there's the Antietams. And they hosted the war for 24 hours or 72 hours. And we still feel the repercussions. It still resonates there. But our community, the war came here and it stayed. And you're right. It didn't stay for days or weeks or months, but years. And it took our community a lot longer to adjust and get over it. There are places that, like Gettysburg, it took years for them to rebuild. Here at Fredericksburg, it took us generations.
But you hear about it, especially you talk to in Stafford County alone. Stafford was just devastated, and there are some that make the argument that Stafford really never recovered until I-95 came through.
That's exactly the truth. That was the first thing that brought us back into our own, where we were not trying to catch up but to grow. It's amazing that populations of Fredericksburg diminished as a result of the war, and that shouldn't surprise us. But what really surprises me is that after the Civil War, when Virginia is recuperating and rebuilding, the population of Virginia as a whole almost doubled between like 1890 and 1900. And yet Fredericksburg continued to lose people. It got smaller. We didn't get back to our pre-Civil War population until the Second World War, until 1944.
Hmm.
So just getting back to the baseline took us 80 years. It took 100 years before we were able to go beyond that and start growing again.
Wow. And Spotsylvania suffered too.
Just the
income and the money in the county. We look at things now and don't realize that.
And you know, that's probably a good thing. That tells us that we're heading in the right direction, where life goes on and rebuilds. And the Civil War isn't a burden upon us, but a reflection of our past, our character. It's something that we can look back on instead of having to live with, which is a great thing.
You have talked, and I can't remember, and I'm hoping you can, the exact quote, because I've heard you use this a number of times, because as we talk about Chancellorsville and Wilderness in Spotsylvania, and I've heard you in the field talk about how these weren't war-defining. They weren't the reason the war ended the way it did, but they did play it. They played a significant role in how it ended.
It really did. When we look at the great marquee things that occurred in our backyard between the Battle of Fredericksburg in December of 1862, and now we're coming up on the great marquee anniversaries of Chancellorsville, which was the first week of May. We're looking at the Battle of the Wilderness in the first week of May, Chancellorsville being in 1863, the Wilderness in 1864. These things, none of them ended the war. None of them necessarily shortened the war. So what we have to ask ourselves is, what did these things do where they draw people together even 155 years later? And what we recognize is that while it didn't necessarily change the war, it changed the people who changed the war. It changed the mindset, it changed their thoughts, their perceptions, and it affected their decision-making on and off the battlefields after this. So what we see happening in Fredericksburg in December of 1862 is going to resonate, and it's going to change the way soldiers make decisions at Chancellorsville. One of the things that we see dramatically is that Confederates at Fredericksburg fought behind a stone wall for the first time, and they suffered very few casualties while inflicting just abysmal losses on their opponent. The lesson for them at that point became, if you have a stone wall, you better use it. It's good protection. If you don't have a stone wall, you better make one. And if you don't have stones, well, you better throw something in front of you. So suddenly trench warfare becomes useful and life-saving. By 1864, it's Mantua. And from the Wilderness to Spotsylvania Courthouse and on south towards Richmond and Cold Harbor and Petersburg, these armies are going to dig in every day. It becomes a subterranean war, if you will. And the first time they came to that realization is right in our backyard. So we not only changed how men work during the Civil War, we've probably changed how military people work on a battlefield ever since.
And what's really interesting is I especially see on your Facebook page a lot of times when people come through, it's interesting that the military comes here and retraces a step, especially looks at Stonewall Jackson's flank march, which we'll get into. But like you say, they come and they look at all of this.
You're right. For many of us, these are our iconic spots where we get to touch history, and there are the touchstones of history. But for the military, these are also classrooms. They get a chance to look at the ground, at the cover, at the battlefield conditions, and try to understand why people make the decisions they do when they do, and see if we've learned from those, if we can have a takeaway from that where this is a good thing to do under these circumstances, or if this is something that we have now learned to do so much better than they did. So, these are great classrooms and wonderful places to dissect our past and make it relevant to our present and hopefully our future.
We're talking with Frank O'Reilly this morning, the historian with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park, Chancellorsville Wilderness, and Spotsylvania, all coming up, the anniversaries in the next few weeks. And there's an event this weekend that we'll let you know about, too, as we go along this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Got an opinion about today's show? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Now, here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
We're talking about the anniversaries of the battles of Chancellorsville, Wilderness, and Spotsylvania this morning with Frank O'Reilly, with historian with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. Chancellorsville in 1863, Wilderness and Spotsylvania in 1864. We should mention, Frank, that this weekend there is living history going on that talks about a lot of what we're talking about.
Absolutely. This coming weekend marks the 154th anniversary of the Battle of the Wilderness, and it's also the conclusion of the 155th anniversary of the Battle of Chancellorsville. So with so much that has historically happened in our backyard, we wanted to remember it, and we're going to have a great big living history weekend out at the Wilderness Battlefield this weekend. So on Saturday and Sunday, May 5th and 6th, we're going to have Union and Confederate soldiers camping out at the Elwood Plantation, which was the heart and soul of the Wilderness Battlefield staging area. We're going to have infantry demonstrations with live fires. We're going to have artillery demonstrations, so we're going to have the cannon out there. Always one of the most amazing things. It always puts my heart in my throat every time I see the gun. And on top of that, we're going to have cavalry out there. So we're going to have horse soldiers who are going to be maneuvering out there. So it's really going to be fun. We're going to have not only Union and Confederate soldiers and cannons, but we're also going to have the generals out there this weekend. So If people want to come out and meet General Ulysses S. Grant and Governor Kay Warren, the Union 5th Corps commander out there, this would be a great time to ask them questions and pick their minds and see what they were really thinking about when they were fighting the Battle of the Wilderness.
And that was a great spot to do that. I've seen some. It was the anniversary weekend, I think, for the 150th for Wilderness in Spotsylvania a few years ago. There's a lot of open space there, and it's that whole area has been preserved so well.
It really has been. The Elwood Plantation, the old Lacey Farm of the 1860s, is truly one of the most iconic spots on the battlefield. It's beautiful out there. It's deceptive because it's so beautiful. It's hard to believe that it was a place of such contentiousness and pain and anguish in 1863 and 1864. But the vestiges of the Civil War are still there, and they still echo through the hollows, not only with just our soldiers who are going to be coming back and reminding us, but also the landmarks on the grounds as well, from the family cemetery where both Union and Confederate soldiers had been buried at one point or another, to those that are still out there today. As for visitors coming to Elwood, they'll get a chance to see where General Stonewall Jackson's left arm is buried.
Yep, I was going to say that's the first time I saw that. It's an iconic place.
It really is. In all of my travels around the country, I can only say I've seen one other monument that has ever been a memorial to a limb, and that was up in Saratoga, New York, and paid homage to Benedict Arnold, of all people. But so, this is truly a unique and different spot, and it really speaks so to what a impact people like Stonewall Jackson had in the immediacy of the moment. It wasn't something that history decided to put a nice patina on. Mm-hmm. This was a fellow who made his impact while he was there, and people respected him, honored him, and did that by burying his arm. You don't see that happen too often.
No, and as we talk about these battles, this is for those that are interested in the Civil War and Stonewall Jackson and covering things, this is where Chancellorsville and in the Elwood area, that's all where really the beginning of the end for him.
You're right. Chancellorsville is a great story, but it's also a great Stonewall Jackson story. He's one of the most successful generals on either side during the Civil War. He had a gift that very few officers ever had, and especially in the Civil War era. He had the ability to take terrible situations and turn them around and create opportunity out of nothing. That was truly a gifted experience on his part. And his greatest accomplishment was Chancellorsville. It's his showpiece, where he's able to successfully march 12 miles stealthily through the wilderness to go completely around the Union Army and blindside them from behind, rout a significant portion of the Union Army, set the whole battlefield on edge, and turn the tables from Confederates fighting for survival to Confederates who are thinking about looking for a decisive victory. The thing that makes it even more impelling and breathtaking is that right at the height of Jackson's ability and fame and payoff, he gets cut down in the mistaken fire of his own men, of all things, wounded in his left arm with two bullets, in the right hand with another bullet. His left arm had to be amputated on the battlefield, which again almost makes this like a novel. I don't think a Michener could even invent this sort of stuff. And that's why I always have to admit that maybe I'm a geek because I'm a historian, but everything that we've ever been able to invent in imagination, somebody's done it in reality and has done it more amazingly.
Yeah.
And the Stonewall Jackson story is one of those great examples.
Boy, it is. And when you think it all, it really all, it, the from Chancellorsville to him dying at Guinea Station, it all happened right here. Because you talked about the flank march, because that basically started over by Catherine's Furnace and then kind of snaked around to back to Chancellorsville.
It does. And it's a long, convoluted path. And mercifully, thoughtfully, the path has been preserved and protected, now known to many of us in Spotsylvania County as Jackson Trail East and Jackson Trail West. And it hasn't been paved and done on purpose so that people still get a chance to evoke the past when they pass down that same path.
And the I don't know if it's coming out this year, but a lot of years around this time, you've got a map in Jackson's own hand that
we sure do.
That shows it.
If people are interested in seeing what Stonewall Jackson knew when he was making this amazing signature movement of his, the map that Jackson drew on the battlefield as he was talking to Robert E. Lee and making this audacious plan is on display out at the Chancellorsville Battlefield Visitor Center. It was a map that was given to Robert E. Lee and he kept and preserved for the rest of his life, and had it tipped into a biography he kept of Stonewall Jackson. So now we have the book and the map on display for anybody who wants to see it during the anniversary.
And if you haven't been out to the Chancellorsville Visitor Center in a few years, it was redone a few years ago, and it is nothing like what you will remember.
It's an entirely new experience out there. The Visitor Center, I couldn't be more proud of it. I loved it when I first started in the 1980s. It's hard to believe it's been that long. But when we changed it, I just got so excited that I love that place. I love the displays. I love the things that we're showing people. We're showcasing more artifacts than ever before, mm-hmm. and really meaningful, deep ones. We have more images, and we're talking about deeper things all across the board that make our battlefield so relevant that it's just really a treat to go through the visitor centers now.
And one of the things in that visitor center is it's kind of there's the names of the people who died in a lot of pictures.
Yes.
And in a lot of ways, I always tell people it's kind of a Civil War Vietnam wall in a way.
It's funny that you should say it that way, because that's exactly the feel it gives off. And I think that was something that even caught us by surprise. We were hoping to be able to evoke thought, and even among ourselves, we refer to it as the reflection room, because it makes us reflect every day we come to work. And when we saw what an impact it had on other people, we were really delighted, because it does take us to a different level. It reminds us that these aren't just blocks on a map. These are people. They had lives. And what happens on our battlefields? Well, it doesn't end on our battlefields. It goes and it touches every home across North America. So what happens in Spotsylvania County or in Orange County or in Stafford County is going to be felt in Maine and Mississippi as well.
Now, you walk along the graves, especially in the cemetery. It's one thing to walk through that room, though, and to look at some of those pictures, and you can't get over how young they literally are kids.
You're right, and it's probably one of the most powerful things to look into their eyes and imagine, and it's easy to imagine that you could have looked into their lives and that they could have looked into your eyes and your life too. In another day, those could have been our pictures.
Mm-hmm.
They could have been us. We could have been them. And I think that's where we finally make a connection. You're right. The cemetery is awe-inspiring. And on Memorial Day weekend, when it's lit up by candlelight, there's nothing more spectacular and beautiful. But nothing replaces looking into the eyes of somebody and realizing this is a human being who made conscious decisions that not only impacted him, but impacted his entire family, if not his community, his state, us.
Well, and you all have made, it, it, have made a great connection to in recent years by bringing in a lot of the letters that a lot of these people that also makes them more alive. I mean, it shows that they're, you know, we're all the same.
That's and I think that's why the Civil War has such a lasting impact on us. This was a war of humanity. I know that doesn't sound right because war is, in many ways, the ultimate expression of inhumanity. But to realize that these are human beings, that's the humanity, that they are people who came from walks of lives like ours. And their letters, their diaries, this war has become more accessible than any other war that we've ever had. Because before the Civil War, soldiers generally couldn't write. They couldn't tell us their story. After the Civil War, they weren't allowed to write with censorship and trying to keep state secrets and things of that sort. But in the Civil War, they could write, and they did. They wrote beautifully. Yeah. They're so expressive. They were the most literate generation in America, I would say. Not necessarily the best spellers in the world, but could they really tell us what they were thinking. And sometimes you really connect with them for the oddest or strangest reasons. I remember reading a North Carolina soldier's letter, and I was just so overwhelmed with it because he had successfully managed to misspell every single word, including the simple ones like I. He spelled it A-H. And to look at the letter, it looked indecipherable.
Yeah.
But when you read it out loud, you had a North Carolina accent, and I became ah. And all of a sudden, you heard his voice coming out of your mouth. And that was really exciting to me. I understood how this fella talked. I could hear him.
Interesting. And that's what going through that room, looking at those pictures, looking at letters and that kind of things, even looking at Stonewall Jackson's map, it's amazing just how, just the topography, how he knew, how that's all in there.
Right. There's something exciting about looking at the words and the maps that takes us to that remembrance room again, that reflection. We get to look into the eyes of the pictures, and that is something. But when we read the words and we get to see the maps, their drawings, we get beyond the eyeballs. We get into their mind. We get to understand how they think and what they think and what they value. And that's really exciting.
Frank O'Reilly here. He's a historian with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. We're talking Chancellorsville Wilderness in Spotsylvania. The anniversaries are upon us. We will continue when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's 8:31.
Okay, listen. We got to talk about something.
Talk done right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg. A Centennial Broadcasting Station. Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. You can weigh in on today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, your host, Ted Schubel.
Frank O'Reilly here. He's a historian with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park, Chancellorsville Wilderness in Spotsylvania. We are coming up on the anniversary, and that's what we're talking about. Chancellorsville was April 30th through May 6th. In 1863, and Wilderness in Spotsylvania in May of 1864. Fascinating stuff talking to you, Frank. One of the things I wanted to ask you was Stonewall Jackson, when you mentioned that he came around after his big victory and then shot by his own men. I mean, that all happened, and it happened at dusk or nightfall.
He launched a surprise attack against the Union Army right at sunset, about 5:15 at night. And he ran this attack right into the night. At about 9 o'clock at night, there is a slight lull that comes across the Chancellorsville battlefield where Union resistance has already been broken, so they were fairly quiet. But the Confederates, for being entirely successful, were just as badly disorganized. They had been pursuing into the darkness. They had been pursuing through thick woods in the wilderness. Everything became completely disoriented and disorienting. So as a result, Stonewall Jackson stopped and regrouped his men, went out in front to refamiliarize himself with the ground and the people on the ground. And it just happened to be that A couple of happenstance incidents occur where Union and Confederate soldiers have brushed against each other, not next to Jackson, many, many hundred yards away from him, but it sparked a firefight that just lit up the entire front and cut across Jackson's front like electricity. Nobody ever saw Jackson. Nobody ever heard him. He just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. So.
And that shows, it's something, you just the way, just his personality of wanting to press forward and, right. and not say, well, we'll pick this up in the morning.
Stonewall Jackson recognized that the Confederates were outnumbered almost 2.5 to 1 on the battlefield. And I know stats don't mean much and they're kind of boring. But the big point is that the Confederates were hopelessly outgunned. But they had one great advantage. They had the momentum. They had the Union Army off on its heels and reeling. They had the opportunity to exploit them. And they could only do it if they did it quickly. Because if they ever stopped and caught their breath, well, the Union Army would catch its breath too. And then the tables would turn. The Confederates under Stonewall Jackson just couldn't afford to do that. So it really becomes an imperative to keep moving. It's an all or nothing proposition. And to Stonewall Jackson's credit, as a soldier, he was all in. There's no doubt in that.
Well, it's so interesting that as iconic as he is, his last days were in this area, that he was over in Spotsylvania, kind of resting. And there's the last picture of him, or the last portrait of him was taken.
The last photograph of Jackson was taken in our backyard. At a place called Belvoir, or the Yerby House. And it was a shot that most people would be familiar with if they brought up a picture of Stonewall Jackson on their phones or their iPads or their tablets. It's a 3/4 view of his face, and we have Mrs. Jackson to thank for that picture. His wife had visited the Army. She was a brand new mother and was introducing the brand new father to his daughter, Julia. To celebrate this moment here in our backyard, this family reunion, even in the midst of war, Mrs. Jackson decided to have a photograph taken of her husband. Wonderful thing about Mrs. Jackson is that she saw something that none of the rest of us would have ever guessed. She had never seen his hair that long and didn't know that it would curl. So she personally teased every curl into place for that picture and got what we consider the perfect essence of Stonewall Jackson. I got to be honest about this. Mrs. Jackson didn't like the photo. She thought he was looking too stern.
He does look very stern.
He does. He's got a nice big crease, furrowed brow. He's glaring at you. But if you cover over the eyes, you will discover a little secret. He's smiling. He's got a big crease in his cheek, too. But he's standing in natural light with a big stiff breeze kicking right into his face. So he's not trying to look tough. He's squinting into the wind.
Yeah. The his loss, obviously, just a huge blow to the Confederacy.
It was. It was a huge blow, really, to the entire American military. It doesn't matter if you were wearing blue or gray in the 1860s. Stonewall Jackson was an exceptional being. It's interesting that Southerners felt that loss almost immediately. But that's something we would expect them to do. What really blows me away is when Northerners and people on other continents who never even met Stonewall Jackson start to feel and lament and bereave him. There's fine eulogies of Stonewall Jackson in Northern newspapers, and Abraham Lincoln himself even contacted one newspaper editor to thank him for his words, saying that he thought Stonewall Jackson was pretty amazing too, even if they didn't agree with each other in politics.
Yeah.
What really gets me excited about Stonewall Jackson, the soldier, regardless of which side he was on or what color his uniform was at any given time, is just his achievements, his accomplishments, and what they meant to people. He inspired an entire generation of people in the 1860s, and it was apolitical. It didn't really matter which side you were on. And the crazy thing is he has inspired every generation of soldiers ever since. American soldiers today are still taking lessons from Stonewall Jackson. When we just look back to Desert Storm, we're looking at Norman Schwarzkopf, and he was candid that he was emulating the movements of Lee and Jackson, which is our backyard. It's the flank march at Chancellorsville that occurs 155 years ago this week. It is the flank attack. Only in Norman Schwarzkopf's day, the flank attack becomes known as the left hook. The fellow who spearheaded that left hook was a general named Frederick Franks. And he came up with a beautiful, pithy way of putting it. He said he was able to execute the perfect Jacksonian movement. And I just love the sound of it. It sounds like it should have a patent of its own, doesn't
it? Yeah.
And then I'm also reminded that there's an adage that says soldiers are, well, at least the officers, are always one war behind because it's the last war they study. But when it comes to Schwarzkopf and Franks, they weren't hearkening back to the Vietnam experience or the Korean experience or even the World War II or World War I experiences. They went back a century and went to the Civil War experience. Granted, they were pulling a lot of other things that they had learned from other centuries and other experiences, but it's Stonewall Jackson that became that name that popped out. He's been amazing. I also saw things in Jackson's own contemporaries that blew me away. As we had talked earlier about letters and what they give us as insights, I saw a neat letter from a Mississippi soldier who had a friend mortally wounded the same month as Stonewall Jackson, but not here in Virginia, but out in Mississippi, outside Vicksburg. And when this fellow Norval Spengler was dying, his last words were, "I guess I'll be taking my dinner with Stonewall Jackson tonight." And I thought, wow, Norval Spengler never met Stonewall Jackson. He didn't even fight under Stonewall Jackson. And so many great generals had given up their lives in the West, yet he didn't want to have dinner with them. He was looking forward to dinner with Stonewall Jackson.
Yeah.
So here's a guy who inspired troops that weren't even his. What a power that is. And Jackson wielded it beautifully. We were a really unique community to have seen Stonewall Jackson at his peak, at his most effective, fighting on our battlefields at Fredericksburg and Chancellorsville. But we also are a special community in that we got to share the ending and, in a sense, share the human tragedy of it, recognizing that this was a man who was consumed by the war he had fought in, like so many others. He was graced in that everybody wrote about it. They gave us more details about his last days and his death than any other human being out of this entire war. But he is just one of many. But we are fortunate that such a gifted person brings such attention to us, and that he not only became part of our community, but we became part of his family.
You can see, you can see a lot of this at Chancellorsville. You go to Guinea Station,
right.
Just near Thornburg, for if you're looking where that is, and that's where he died. That's where the Confederates. There were all kinds of railroads, and they still converge there, which is really interesting. When you're at Guinea Station, usually a train will come by.
You're right. Guinea Station was important to the Confederates in 1862 and 1863. Because it's still very important. It's located on the principal north-south railroad across Virginia. Fredericksburg and Stafford County have a big vested interest in this as well, because the original name of the railroad in our backyard was the Richmond, Fredericksburg, and Potomac Railroad. It is now the CSX line, but it still runs in the original configuration from Fredericksburg on down to Richmond. It's changed a little bit on the Stafford side. It used to go out to Aquia Landing.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's been straightened out to go straight up to Washington these days. But the RFMP Railroad was the lifeline of both the Union and the Confederate Army, believe it or not. They were feeding and equipping and reinforcing their forces, bringing their food and equipment and troops in by railroad from each terminus. So the Union Army was living off it in Stafford County while the Confederates were living off it in Caroline County. And Guinea Station became the supply base for Robert E. Lee's army. Now, you've been out to Guinea Station, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners have been too. I encourage many to come on out again. It's a beautiful, evocative spot. Mm-hmm. And it seems so quiet and so remote. And yet in 1863, it was probably one of the busiest places in all the Upper Confederacy.
Yeah,
it was the home of 20,000 plus troops at any given point. And at one point, that tiny little bump in the road was the address of over 100,000 people. Because if you were serving in Lee's army, your address was care of Guinea Station.
Well, and the hope was, once he got to Guinea Station, was to get him to Richmond.
Precisely.
And you wonder, and I guess the railroad was out. The lines had been cut, so they couldn't get him to Richmond. And
right.
What was pneumonia finally did Stonewall Jackson in.
It's one of those things where the Confederates were anxious to get Stonewall Jackson away from the immediate danger of the battlefield, and Jackson's doctors were anxious to get him to the hospitals in Richmond. And the most convenient and logical way of doing that was by railroad, and the only place to get a train is Guinea Station. So it's logical that he wound up there. And as you pointed out, the line was cut. Union cavalry had slipped behind Confederate lines and raided that line just before Jackson was evacuated. It would have been an interesting moment had Jackson been on the trains, because it would have been a bizarre reunion. The Union cavalry commander who had cut this line was a fellow named George Stoneman, who happened to be Stonewall Jackson's roommate at West Point. So The old roomies might have met.
Never heard that story. That is so interesting. We're talking Chancellorsville Wilderness in Spotsylvania. We're coming up on the anniversary of all of those, and there's a living history this weekend at Elwood, and we'll do that. We'll talk about that again when we wrap it up this morning with Frank O'Reilly from the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. We'll be right back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Got an opinion about today's show? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Now, here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Frank O'Reilly here with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. Frank, we could go on for two more hours and give an hour to each of these. One of the things when we talk about wilderness in Spotsylvania that occurred in 1864, and when you walk around, and again, all of these, they're all right here, and you ought to just take a day and
right.
or part of a day and go and walk around. Just the brutal part of the war, with both wilderness had to be just terrifying with the fires and the bloody angle and everything that happened in Spotsylvania. It was really, those were tough times.
1864 changes everything. The rules change fundamentally. We've gone from marquee battles of great white heat moments, and then it takes months to recuperate and recover and rebuild, to now a relentless, grinding, punishing war, where these two armies will lock in mortal combat every single day. Starting at the Wilderness on May 5th and 6th, this very weekend, 154 years ago. And they will fight every single day until the very end of the war at Appomattox, which means that they will be fighting great battles and small battles, but every single day they will be in contact for the next 11 months. We've never seen anything like that before. And one of the things that really drives it home is right here at the Wilderness. It's the first time that we had the two great captains of the Civil War go head to head. Robert E. Lee has already become preeminent in the East, and Ulysses S. Grant, who had made his claim to fame in the West, is coming East as the general-in-chief of all Union armies, but makes his headquarters in the field opposite Lee. Their introduction to each other in battle is at the Wilderness, and it goes on to Spotsylvania. And you're right, it's a tremendous bloodletting. It's a terror. There are fires. The losses escalate out of control. But because our backyard has seen such a terrible chapter in our history, it may have given America a brighter chapter. Because I'll be honest with you, General Grant and General Lee did not have a great deal of respect for each other when they met at the Wilderness. They both thought the other was over-embellished. But 11 months later, they have to rethink that. And when they do meet at Appomattox, they meet with a deeper respect than anyone would have expected had the war ended at the Wilderness or had it ended at the Bloody Angle at Spotsylvania. I don't know if that first remarkable spark of respect that these two men show each other at Appomattox would resonate. I don't even know if the spark would have occurred before that, if it wasn't for our backyard, if there weren't terrible places like the Wilderness in Spotsylvania. I don't know if we would have been able to grow the America that we have today.
Wow. And then I never realized this until a couple of years ago. You did a program out in there's a monument in a little section at Bloomsbury in Spotsylvania.
Yes.
The last battle in Spotsylvania, and then they're gone, and they never come back. The war goes south.
Right. Once they leave us in Spotsylvania and the Harris Farm out at Bloomsbury, the active combat in the Rappahannock Valley is gone. But the war isn't over. It goes on to Richmond. It goes into Petersburg and into a grueling siege. And then it goes to Appomattox. The next time we're going to see the Union Army in our backyard is when they're marching home. The war is over.
We covered a lot in an hour, Frank, and and like you say, just significant battles in this area. And again, dear, I love that phrase that it didn't necessarily change the war, but it changed the people who fought in the wars that all had happened here.
This is a momentous time, and I hope that people have a chance this weekend to come on out and see the battlefields and to come on out to the Wilderness and participate in the Living History Weekend that we have at Elwood. It's very family friendly. We want people to interact with the soldiers. Ted, you and I have been talking about the soldiers and their mindsets and looking into their eyes and reading their words. Here's a chance for people to come on out and actually get a chance to meet the soldiers and see how they lived. Let them share their stories. And again, get a chance to meet the generals as well as the common soldiers and find out what it takes to fire a cannon or maneuver as a cavalryman on horseback on a battlefield. This is going to be really exciting. And I think that people are going to be really pleased if they come on out. They're going to learn lots. They're going to have lots of fun. It's great for kids to see it and to participate. We have junior ranger programs out there that they can get involved in to earn patches. We also have Civil War trading cards for the kids that are wonderful keepsakes. We hope to see a lot of folks this weekend. Come on out.
Frank is the author of a terrific book on the Battle of Fredericksburg, the 1862 Battle of Fredericksburg. You ought to get it because, boy, that gives you learn about what happened in 1862, and it really sets up a lot of what we talk about. But it's a terrific book if you want to get it. It's called the Battle of Fredericksburg.
It's called the Fredericksburg Campaign, the Winter War on the Rappahannock, and it's where the Civil War is going to turn our backyards into battlefields for the first time.
Frank, thank you. This was great stuff, and we really are coming up on really the next few weeks when everything is here, and just encourage everyone to get out and go to the Visitor Center and check out the battlefields.
Thank you, Ted. It's great to be here, and I hope to see you out on the field soon.
Frank O'Reilly is with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park, Chancellorsville Wilderness in Spotsylvania, the anniversary coming up.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.